Welcome to Michigan HockeyCast 4.25, where we ascertain true value for all involved. Before we get into the actual hockey cast and the grading of the players that everyone is tuning in to find out about, we must touch on the biggest news of the last week or so, and that is the beginning of the USFL, which I'm fairly certain you watched the majority of the games. Did you have any takes?
I had one of the games on.
One of the games. All right. I'm proud of you.
I wasn't really watching it. It was on in the background. it was the Michigan Panthers game against the Houston Gamblers.
I mean, Patterson played okay other than his like two really terrible plays, which feels like his Michigan career. I mean, they were down inside the five, and I think he like fumbled a snap and gave up a fumble six, which was not great. But I think his like YPA and his completion percentage, and he moved well and threw the ball. And
I mean, what I'll say is that getting on the major networks is a good first step.
Do you know why they're on the major networks? I looked this up and I could not figure it out.
Probably gambling.
Because Fox Sports owns the league.
So. I did know that, but they were on NBC, right?
They split.
Yeah.
So you watched a little bit of that game. I mean, I didn't think that the football is bad. You can also go for three, which I find intriguing. And it reminds me of I Am Flag Football.
Yeah.
I didn't see an onside kick. That's the other thing you're looking for, right? You're looking for the things that are going to – the NFL is sort of like sitting there and wanting to see what happens. And you're like, can we work this rule or, you know, game theory change, whatever, into – you know, the higher quality of football. And I didn't see any onside kicks. So, you know, but three of the four games went down to like, I think the final possession, which is, I mean, that's watchable.
Yeah. I am intrigued to see if it lasts.
Did you see the other thing that was really interesting is the drone cams?
No, I did not see that.
So the drone cams, you just have drones that are flying within about 10 or 15 feet of these players. And you can hear that on the broadcast. I think Steve Lorenz was on Twitter and he was like, why does it sound like 1,000 ants are dying before every play? Because they did not mute the drones. And they're just flying all over. Did you follow the Devion Smith drama?
I saw there was drama, but I don't know what it's about. So...
it was he was cut for, I think, player discipline issues, but he's been on Twitter like not so happy about because he doesn't know what he did wrong. And apparently no one will tell him.
Hmm.
So I don't know what to make of that. I did see Channing Stribling had an interception, though. He's been in all three of these startup leagues, and I think I've seen him get a pick in at least two of them now. But he's probably not going to be an NFL corner.
I would say at this point, probably not.
Yeah. All right, so now we've talked about more professional debuts in football. We can transition to a couple of the hockey debuts real quick. Basically, half of Michigan's team made their professional debut last week. And most, I think, went well to good.
Yeah, I would say there. I mean, you know, it's a small sample, right? And there's only so much really bad you can do in one game, right? Like,
yeah,
there were no goalies.
So
it's not like football where we have the stats of like, oh, you went 3 for 21 in the air.
Yeah,
but yeah, a few of them have already gotten their first points. Owen Power got his as an assist. I think it was in his second game.
Yep.
Beniers now has two goals and an assist for 3 points.
Yeah, and one of his goals was actually really nice, and his assist might have been even better. I think it was a cross ice from the boards all the way and hit a guy in the tape, and he buried it, and you're like, okay, well, yeah, I've seen that a few times.
Blankenberg had an assist in the first game.
He also played decent defensively in that game. Like, he was, I think, the third star.
I don't watch the Blue Jackets, so...
You didn't even want to watch with KJ and Blankenberg's debut.
I will probably watch one game, you know, in there just to see at some point in the next 2 weeks, but didn't have time last week.
All right.
One thing you note about that is a bunch of Michigan players went down. Did you see that?
Yeah.
About 9 or 10 of the players were down.
Good.
In Columbus watching that game. So,
well, he was a pretty well-liked person around the program. So you would.
Well, this was Blankenberg and Johnson, right? Like,
sure.
They were watching both guys. But, and then Thomas Bordalo debuted for the San Jose Barracuda and has since been called up to the San Jose Sharks.
Yeah, he had like 3 assists in the first game and then was immediately just called up. They're like, well, yeah, this guy's probably all right. And then I think he got an assist in his first period with the Sharks, if I remember that correctly.
Let me look up that one.
I think he got a puck on net, and it was no. He moved the puck from behind the that was in the AHL game. He moved the puck on actually a pretty nice pass from the corner up to the point, and a guy walked into like straight away. And
yes, Bordalo did have an assist in the Sunday night game against the Wild.
Wild, yeah. I had a little bit of that on.
Brisson has been playing for the Henderson Silver Knights in the AHL. He has 6 points in 3 games and will not be called up, presumably, in the next couple weeks. They don't want to burn the ELC year. Vegas has some cap issues. They're also in the midst of a playoff push,
run. Yeah.
I guess you want to call it, because it's, I guess, a push, but they're not pushing very hard because they're probably not going to make it as of the time of this taping, but that could change. We'll see. But he'll probably be in the AHL for the rest of the year, and then I would assume probably on the roster next year, because they're going to need some cheap contracts.
Yeah, that's very true.
Elsewhere, since we talked last week, Johnny Beecher officially signed with the Providence Bruins. I think he has made his first
appearance.
Did
he play?
I think he has. The other news was Jimmy Lambert. Yeah, that was a couple days ago. We found out he has signed a tryout with the Bridgeport Islanders. That's the name of the team, right? And I know it was in Bridgeport. I think it was the Islanders, their name. I'm not sure if Garrett Van Wy has made his debut yet.
Yes. He has. Well, at least they showed him going onto the ice. So maybe they pulled him back and he didn't. But the video was him walking through his teammates, everyone calling him new guy. So
let's see. Beecher has played 2 games. No points yet for the Providence Bruins.
How many breakaways do you think he has?
I will also say that yesterday I was at the Chipotle at Briarwood Mall in Ann Arbor. And I saw 4 Michigan hockey players.
Wow, that is many.
I saw Triscott, Dylan Duke, Mackie Samoskevich, and Luke Hughes. They were there as a group.
Did you share some chips and queso?
No, but them being at the restaurant would seem to me to signal that they will be back on Michigan next year. Not that we didn't already know that,
yeah.
But that would be the assumption. I also saw Eric Backich. And I saw Terrence Williams and Kobe Bufkin.
What, did they all come together? Like, are the 7 dudes, of them rolling in like the clown car?
The hockey dudes were together. The other 3 were separate. They were all at different times. I was like, oh, look, there's Terrence Williams.
And were you at Chipotle for like 4 hours?
I was there for several hours. I was meeting a friend.
Oh, okay. I didn't know if you'd like temporarily moved into the Chipotle now that you know where to get all of like the dirt.
I saw Frankie Collins there a few months ago. The conclusion of this is,
so if you want to see Michigan athletes, don't go to games. Go hang out at Chipotle at Briarwood.
Yes, pretty much. the basketball guys both picked up the food, but Eric Backich sat down and ate there. And there were other athletes, too, by the way, who I don't know who they are. I don't know what sports they play, but they had the jackets and everything on. So.
Do you ever look at the little tags on the
backpacks? On the backpacks. But they were standing like 25 feet away. Oh. So
you need like some
goggles,
night vision goggles or telescopes, plural telescopes, to just walk around. So all those. Yeah, I think it's a safe assumption that those players will be back. The last bit of news that I saw on the board today was that Strauss Mann is now, yes. Is he with the Sharks or just in the organization?
They said he signed with the Sharks.
So he might make his NHL debut, probably. I mean, if he's signed, they're going to play him, right? They're not signing him for as a third stringer, probably.
Let me look this up. Straussman signs with Sharks. Let's see. Signed a 1-year contract. Per club policy, terms of the deal have not yet been discussed.
I wonder if that's like this year or if it's next year, including
it's these a, it's last an NHL games. Deal. So the one thing I'm curious about, because he is an undrafted, I don't know the exact rules about this, but I'm not sure if he will have to go through waivers or not, because that was something that came up a few months ago with the Harry Sotiri situation when Harry Sotiri signed from Finland intending to play for the Maple Leafs. And then it turns out he had to go through waivers for some reason, because there's a special class of free agent that must go through waivers.
If a certain age or something?
From the international market. And the Coyotes claimed him off of waivers. So then now he's with the Coyotes instead.
Well, is that his first attempt to come play in the NHL?
No, he's been in the NHL before.
And he still has to go through waivers?
I don't know why that is, but there is a certain class of free agent who has to. So I don't think that it applies to Mann, but we'll see. I also don't think he would be claimed on waivers the way Harry Sotiri was, but
well, if he was, then he'd still be in the NHL, and I'm guessing he probably would not care.
Yeah.
So I think that's it for the news.
Pretty much.
All right.
Oh, well, Dryden McKay was suspended for a PEDs situation, apparently related to a like a gummy supplement, a vitamin something or other. It appears to be unintentional. It's a 6-month ban from life, everything.
Life, you're not allowed to go to Chipotle at the mall.
I mean, it was you asked me if this was an NHL ban or a NCAA ban, and I said well, neither. It's from the USADA, the anti-doping organization. So I would assume that's everything, but I don't know to what level that applies. If he shows up at the Cube trying to play in a men's league, <You can't. laughs> I'm not sure if someone will be there to haul him away, but
that would be pretty funny. But he wasn't going back to Minnesota State, right?
No.
Did he have a COVID year left or no? He might have.
Probably, but it was assumed he was going to be signing in the NHL. So we'll see what happens with that. But that clearly was a pretty unusual situation to have the Hobie Baker winner suspended for PEDs.
Yeah, and a goalie, no less.
All I have to say is the steroids that Jimmy Vesey was taking didn't really work. But
always good to bring up his name on this hockey cast. Thank you, Alex. On that note, let's transition into our grading. We did this last year, where we just went through all of the players and gave arbitrary grades based on what our expectations and how we thought they played. And so we'll start in segment one with the forwards. So if you don't care anything about Michigan forwards, maybe you can skip ahead to segment two, and you can listen to the defenseman, goaltending, and overall grades. But the first guy on my Excel sheet sitting here in front of me, we'll start with the hero line, is Matty Beniers. We've already talked about him playing in the NHL, so probably not too bad. He had 23 assists, 20 goals for 43 points. Not too bad. Obviously, he was a top five draft pick. I mean, I gave him an A because I didn't think that he was going to come in and be a Kyle Connor where he's just going to score at 2 points per game. There's your response to Jimmy Vesey, is I'll give you a Kyle Connor. And I thought that everything I expected him to really do, he did. There were some games where maybe you can say that that line disappeared and would have liked to seen them a little bit more. But I mean, that's the way it goes in the end when you're putting up over a point per game and you are headlining a team that makes the Frozen Four. It's hard to really neg him. I thought he improved. But yeah, I gave him an A.
Yeah, I would give him an A as well. 20 goals, 23 assists, 43 points, highest shooting percentage on the team among players who took more than 10 shots. So pretty good. He improved as a shooter. He also led the team in plus minus at 29, which is a pretty bad stat, but in the absence of better stats. It's what we've got.
Because we have nothing for college hockey. No time on ice. Nothing.
And, you know, he was the lifeblood of Michigan's power play, right? He had 10 power play goals, which was the most on the team. And Michigan's power play for most of the year was in the top 10 of the country, and five game-winning goals as well, second on the team. So, you know, he really played well. And
I mean, he played well defensively too. I mean, we talk, there's no real statistics for that, but you know, he would be as top line center, you're going to be tracking back. And I don't remember a lot of times when we looked at, you know, poor transition goals and you're like, hey, where's Beniers? Why isn't he back? I think there was one or two times I may have mentioned it, but for the most part, I mean, we even talked about this last week against Denver where, you know, that line didn't do a whole lot. I didn't think they were terrible defensively though, you know? And so when you get your top line to be able to not be noticeable in a negative way in your defensive zone, I mean, that's a good thing.
Pretty good.
My memory of him is just going to be, I don't have one specific that Brisson, the goal that him and Brisson scored, I believe it was in the Notre Dame game was pretty sweet, but I mean, the thing I'll always remember about him is the forever shifts that he and KJ and fill in a line mate would have where they just seemingly keep the puck in the end for what 20, 30 seconds up to a minute. And then by the end of that particular dalliance in the offensive zone, five new guys would be on the ice. So they had like skated through and rotated everyone off the ice, but still keeping the puck in the zone. And that was something that, I mean, I'm sure other team people have done it, but it was really noticeable, especially last year, but Beniers and then Johnson were phenomenal at that.
Yeah, and I think that when you look at Beniers, of the guys that are currently leaving the team, I think he's the one who will probably have the best NHL career. So,
well, he started the best. I mean, two goals in his first, what, two or three games.
Yeah.
One of his line mates, very similar statistics and drafting, Kent Johnson. They've basically played together for 2 years. He was also on the Hero line, a sophomore, only 8 goals, but 29 assists for 37 points, slightly under a point per game. You know, this is going to be probably harsh. I gave him sort of a B-ish. I couldn't decide if we were doing pluses or minuses. And I didn't think he was as good as probably 4 or 5 other guys on the team that I did give A's to. Clearly, he got a lot of points, but there weren't a lot of situations where I remember looking at him on the ice and being like, this is why Michigan got that goal. This is why, you know, they prevented this goal. It was more, he got a lot of points, but I don't always remember how, if that's a thing. So I was not going to give him the same grade. I didn't want to give him a C because I didn't think that a guy who averages almost a point per game should get a C, because that's doing a lot and you put him on any team and you probably take him, but I didn't think he was good enough to get an A. I gave him a B.
Yeah. I'm probably in line with that as well. B feels right. B minus is low, too low, I think, for that, but I concur with the other points and just feels right.
The memory I have is he scored, I can't remember who it was against, I didn't go look it up, but he scored a between the legs goal, like right near the net. And he, like, the other thing that I always remember about him is how many Michigans did he attempt? Probably like 4 or 5 this year.
Quite a few, yeah.
Yeah. Those are the things I think I'm always going to think about when I think about Kent Johnson, at least in Michigan.
Yeah. The goal against Minnesota, his freshman year.
From the sharp angle.
Down the wing. That was really the only highlight of those two insufferable evenings.
Oh, geez.
I think that's probably mine.
Their line mate for the second half of the year, one of the biggest risers as well for Michigan, Brendan Brisson, same class, sophomore, 21 goals, 21 assists. He started with a bang with a few goals right away, cooled off, and then picked it up again. I thought he played well on this line, playing with Beniers as well. A lot of times he played with Bortolo. He jumped around, but he was a first round pick, I should say, what, a year in 2020 draft?
2020.
From Vegas. I thought he really got better this year. I thought that his passing and his playmaking in the offensive zone was better. He seemed to come in as just a shooter, and that's not really what I think of him now. You look at some of the stuff he did in the tournament against AIC. He had really nice, that really good passing combo that we talked about with Beniers against Notre Dame. He's a guy that was not just a shooter, despite being known for his sort of bombs from the Brisson dot, as we called it for a while.
Yeah, Brisson played a really good season. He led the team in goals with 21. Also very effective on the power play. He led the team in game-winning goals with 6, 42 points in 38 games. I thought he was fine defensively and improved as in the physical dimension. Penalties were still a little bit of an issue sometimes, but not as much as they had been in the past. No real issues with Brisson, really. So I would give him an A.
Yeah.
And he was also very good in the Allentown regional. So,
yep, I agree. Definitely an A. And the one, I mean, I have several memories of him. We talked about some of them, but the one is that between the legs goal against Minnesota State, I think that was the game tire or the second, is either the second or third goal, but we were watching it on a crappy feed and you just had to rewind it about 3 times because you're like, wait a minute, what did he just do?
NCHC TV.
There's our plug for hoping we don't have to watch that next year. That's the hero line. Second line, I just called the Bordalo line because he seemed to play with a lot of different players. But when he was healthy and in town, he centered his line a lot of times with Brisson, not as much in the second half of the year. Bordalo had 12 goals and 25 assists for 37 points. Not too bad. He was a second round pick from a couple years ago. I mean, I don't think he was Michigan's best player this year because I think that's probably Beniers, Brisson, you could argue Portillo, maybe even Luke Hughes, but he was, I don't have the right word. I'm probably going to miss watching him play as much as I miss watching any of the guys who are leaving. I always said that like he was all the things Kent Johnson wanted to try to do with the puck, Thomas Bordalo did. And he got fancy at times, but it wasn't like too fancy. He wasn't trying to do something that he couldn't do, and he could sort of make special plays. My memories for him were that goal in the phone booth against Michigan State where there's like 3 guys around him and he stick handles right to the post in the Big Ten quarterfinals and just scores short side high. And just like, that's the kind of stuff that he can do. And then making the play to get the empty net goal against Quinnipiac is just like, that's just, to me, that's quintessential Thomas Bordalo. He's just going to make a play that you don't really expect someone to make, and he's going to put it on someone's tape. I mean, he almost won the game against Denver on the flip pass, which was just like a perfect touch pass to Brisson, who redirected it, and Corona made the save. But Bordalo, that's just sort of what he's done his whole career. I gave him an A because he struggled through some things, but in the end, he didn't have the points to be Michigan's best player, but or the goals probably, but I probably felt as comfortable with him on the ice as anyone.
I gave him a B plus or an A minus, one of the two. It's just a little, I would elect a little more offense at different points, but you look up at the end and you do have the 37 points. You know, I think it's important to note in context that he did have COVID-19, which some of the other players in the team didn't. And I think twice, didn't he? Might have.
He did it his freshman year, too.
Well, he did his freshman year, but more players had it then. Whereas this, it kind of stood out as an example of sorts. And I think as a society, we have not, or at least in sports and sports coverage, has kind of underestimated the extent to which having COVID leads to poor seasons in certain players.
Well,
we've seen that across different leagues. So
yeah,
that's important to keep in mind.
Version. I mean, like it, yeah. It held him out for, I mean, because he got it like and missed the last series against Ohio State at the end of the first half and didn't come back right away, I don't think, to start in January.
Yeah, he missed 5 games relative to the other players. That's important to keep in mind. But he was very good defensively and he was fine as a second line center and did all the things you wanted him to do. So I have him in the B plus A minus range.
Did you have any other memories of him? I mean, the Wisconsin goal, his
freshman
year. The Wisconsin
one is the one that will stand out, but a fun player and a productive player.
One of his line mates, guy who actually scored the second to last now time that Michigan was in the Frozen Four, Mike Pastiov. We call him Pasta. It's his teammates do. It's easier to type when you're tweeting. Came back for his fifth year. I didn't think he was great last year. He was kind of a guy, and then he really blossomed, I thought, this year, and scored 11 goals and 15 assists, which is not a lot in comparison to other players on the team, but in relative to expectations, I thought he was sort of the perfect second liner. You've called him Michigan's best defensive forward all year.
I called him Michigan's best defensive winger for
the
sure.
Winger. Okay. Winger. And I can't really disagree with that. He wasn't drafted. He's a free agent. You still got 26 points out of him. I think he played in every game this year, if I'm not mistaken.
He did. Yeah. Him, Van Wy, and Portola were the only three to play in every game.
And I'm going to give him an A for this season because of those reasons, where it's sort of relative to expectation. I thought you got about as much as you were going to get out of him, and I was impressed with the season that he had coming back after, you know, not a great second to last season, I guess, in this situation.
Yeah, he set career highs in goals, assists, and points, and played a crucial role in the top six, or the middle six, rather, however you want to phrase it. But good defensively, and all around strong game, and veteran leadership, all that kind of stuff. So, you know, he's in my B plus A minus range as well. A fine player who had a very nice senior year, and you know, you always like to see that, right? I mean, and Nick Pastrzok had a nice last year too. So both guys went out on more of a higher note.
The memories I have for him are his empty net goal against Quinnipiac. I thought it was really fun and nice for him because of just being the senior and the guy that gets to basically clinch the fact that you're going to the Frozen Four in a time where it looked like everything was crumbling all around you.
Yeah.
The other thing is that people are going to forget because Michigan won a bigger game that day, but on December 4th, he had a hat trick against Minnesota, and they pummeled the Gophers that night at Yost, and no one will ever remember it because of the Iowa football game. But that's our ode to Mike Pastiov. Anything else you have for him?
Nope.
The other line mate that ended up on this line down the end of the season, Mark Estapa, who was a freshman. He was not drafted. I believe he was an overager.
He's a single overager.
Okay. He had 2 goals, 9 assists, ended up with 11 points. He didn't really even play a whole lot in the first half of the season. I played a few games, but became a mainstay in the second half for sure. Didn't score at a really, really high rate, but he was very physical, could win battles in the corners on a team that didn't have a lot of guys that could do that, and really contributed physically, I think, a lot to this team. I'll just remember the things for him was, what was the Children of Yost chant? Free Estapa, I think it was, when he kept going to the box those times. And
I always said that we should have made a Free Estapa shirt in the Yango store.
See, there you go. And he's only a freshman. I gave him a B because I thought that he performed probably above average, especially given his first half of the year where he barely was not a healthy scratch. So, and then to contribute in the top six on a team that went to the Frozen Four, where you didn't cringe when he was on the ice, I thought was a testament to what he could bring to a team like this.
Yeah. Estapa's a guy that it would be very interesting to have time on ice numbers for him, because he's a player who definitely usage increased as the season went along. I mean, 2 goals is not great, 4% shooting also not great, but he played a larger role as the season rolled along and ended up being fine defensively, and he was able to kind of bang around in the corners and in the front of the net sometimes. And, you know, he's an interesting player to watch moving forward. I assume he'll be in the lineup on a regular basis next season. So a good set of skills to work with. So probably a C+, B- range is just a, you know, decent first year, and we'll see where he goes.
Yeah, and the other thing is that he started on the Van Wy line.
Yeah.
In the first few times, and it worked its way up and was on essentially a scoring line with Bortolo and Pasta, both two guys that had double-digit goals. So, you know, to be able to put yourself in that position means you're doing something right.
Sure.
The third line, Beecher and the kids. Johnny Beecher was a guy that was missed the first month or so of the season with an injury, a first-round pick couple years ago, just kind of an enigma in a lot of his time at Michigan, really, really kicked it into gear in 2022, started driving his own line when he got paired with both the freshman Sam Moscovich and Duke. 6 goals, 9 assists for 15 points. So the point tallies weren't really there. He was, especially when you compare him to what his draft stock was, which was a first rounder, 3 years ago now. I gave him a B because I thought he really came on strong at the end of the year. And I thought that he created a lot of chances that the puck didn't go in. And there's no analytical models we have for that we can show it. But I thought that he put a bunch of people in really good positions. And, you know, you don't always score those chances. But I would say that his line, not just him as a player, but his line was probably the most effective against Denver in the Frozen Four as well.
Yeah, well, I mean, look, Beecher is who he is, and that kind of got established over the course of his career, but he was a useful player and a good piece for that third line, a guy who could also kind of bang around and add the physical element to the game and certainly the size that Michigan didn't always have. It reared its head in not great ways sometimes when, you know, he would take the bad penalty, but more effective in the second half of the season, 11 points in 21 games in the second half, which isn't really that notable in the sense that it's basically his career mark at Michigan. If you followed him over the course of his career, he was always right around the half point per game mark, but solid player. And I think it is the right decision for him to move on to the next level, because I just doesn't seem like he's improving really at Michigan, but that doesn't mean he wasn't an effective player and a useful piece. So, you know, the B minus range, C plus, solid piece.
The memory I'll always have of him is just all those breakaways that he could not score on. And then finally, when he did score a goal, he just snapped his stick in half in celebration, and everybody got a kick out of that. Yeah, he's, like you said, he's not going to be remembered for his career, but I thought his second half of the season, and it's too bad they didn't, you know, win another game or two, because he would have been a huge part of that remembrance of that second half. But his line mate, this is probably one of the most fun guys we'll talk about. Mackie Samuskevich was a freshman this year. He had 10 goals, 19 assists for 29 points. He was a late first round pick last year of the Florida Panthers. I gave him an A because, I mean, I'm not expecting him to be Kyle Connor, where he walks in and is the best player in college hockey, but there was so much to like about him, and you could see the improvement over the course of the year. He started becoming a creator in the second half. His shot is obviously there. He has a great laser snapshot, wrist shot. But he also has become a play driver where he can outskate guys and get to the net. He's setting up players like Duke and Beecher. That line just really popped, I thought, in the second half. And I mean, he's a guy that, I mean, Michigan loses a lot, but bringing him back, he's going to be probably one of the best players in the Big Ten, if not in the country next year.
Yes. I mean, Samuskevich, 29 points in 40 games. And a guy who, I mean, he was the driver of that line, right?
Yeah.
Beecher added the physical component and was the center, but Mackie was the one kind of creating the opportunities and the speed mix with the shot and the passing ability. I think he is starting out on the first line next season. We'll see kind of what they decide to do. And that's a topic for probably the final show when we talk about the incoming recruits, but it'll be interesting to see who they put him with, whether it's Frank Nazar or Fantilli, depending on which center they like more. But he'll be a very important piece next season, and he was a pretty important piece this year and should be in the All Big Ten conversation in his sophomore year. So I'll put him in the B plus A minus range. It was one of Michigan's best players in the forward group beyond that top line.
Their line mate Dylan Duke was a fourth round pick of the Lightning last year. He was also obviously a freshman, 10 goals, 9 assists for 19 points. Maybe I'm just like too nice or whatever. I'm also giving him an A because I did not really expect him to do as well. I mean, you could probably argue a B because he only had 20 points, but he did get 10 goals and he did sort of blow up again at the end of the second half of the season. And that's sort of what you're looking for from freshmen. I mean, you look at Mackey and he did the same thing, becoming more of a play driver, but that line really just, I thought, brought out the best in all three players, giving them defined roles. And Duke became a nice little finisher. I mean, he got double digit goals and, you know, made a couple defensive plays as well. He's probably not, it doesn't have the upside that Samoskevich does, but, and he's most likely what, at least a 3-year player, but I thought, you got pretty much everything you were going to get out of him in his freshman year. And I look for him to be sort of a more skilled version of Estapa in the future.
Yeah, possibly. He scored 8 goals in the calendar 2022, and that was over a 21 game span. So that is, you know, in the 16 ish goal range over a full season, 30 goals in the NHL, if we're prorating it to 82 games. But, and Duke brought an interesting skill set, right? He is also a scrappier player and can play around the net. I mean, I expect him to be in the top 6 next season because of that skill set he has as a player who can play around the crease. So I like him a lot. I would put him in the B plus A minus range as well.
So getting down to the blue collar line, I have 4 people on this line because they basically played 4 different people on this line, especially in the second half of the year when it was win every game time. Garrett Van Wy was the center. He has since moved on and got himself an AHL deal. Not a lot of points, 6 goals, 6 assists for only 12 points. Obviously never drafted. He's a free agent. You know, we've kind of said the same things about him over the years. We'll probably say the same things about his line mates, but he's a physical guy and plays hard, kills penalties. That's probably the thing that you'll remember the most about him is just his improvement on the penalty kill and then his ability to take those chances and turn them into offensive chances shorthanded. Couldn't finish a lot of them. Just didn't have the hands to do that. But came back for his 4th year. I gave him a C because you pretty much got what you expected. And especially at the end when he got to cram in a couple of goals in the tournament, I thought it capped off his career pretty nicely for Michigan.
Yeah, you got exactly what you expected. I would go with that C as well. His scoring was always in that 10, 11 points per 40 games span, 12 and 42 this year. And the funny thing about him is that you look at the scope of his season, he scored quite a bit in the first month or so of the year and then was basically a sack of potatoes offensively for a couple months. He had 1 point from December 11th through March 19th. 1 point. It wasn't a goal. It was an assist. It was a secondary assist, too. And then he had 2 goals and an assist in the final 3 games, all of which were in the NCAA tournament. So peaked when it mattered on an offensive basis. I dock him in part because there were some 5-minute majors that stood out.
Plural, I think. Yeah.
Yes. Especially one against Notre Dame in overtime. So that hurts. But yeah, right in line with what we kind of thought. So C makes sense.
You can pretty much control C, control P that for Nolan Moyle, who played next to him on the wing for 4 years. They were pretty much together at the hip the entire time,
I believe basically control V is paste, not control P.
Oh yeah, you're right. Well, you maybe you want to control and then print it. I think control P is print, but
I believe it is. Yes.
Yeah. Control V. Okay. But Moyle's the guy who, right, gets the puck out of the zone and just goes flying down the wing and then gets to the dot and turns hard into the net from whichever way he's going. And sometimes he loses the puck. Sometimes he gets there. He usually doesn't finish. He did have 7 goals and 8 assists for 15 points. Not too bad. I think he had a couple empty netters in there. He's a free agent. He's, I mean, it's basically the same thing as Van Wy, right? I gave him a C. He also had a couple of majors that we talked about. I'm just, the thing I'm going to miss about him is getting to make my Moyle jokes. So
I think that Moyle, I would give a C+ to, because I thought his majors were not in as bad of circumstances Van Wy's. And he did also improve, I think, in a way that we didn't talk about much. But when you look at his numbers, they were career high numbers. His 7 goals tied a career high, but 8 assists was 4 better than his previous high. And 15 points well outpaced his career high as well. So it was actually a very good season from him, which you kind of do expect relative to Van Wy, because we didn't talk about it enough. But Van Wy was a triple overager. So,
he
is currently or about to be 25 years old. Whereas
he's older than you.
Whereas Moyle is actually younger than me. So it made more sense that he improved more than Van Wy did. But, a good player and had a nice career. So I'll give him a C+ or a B-.
Jimmy Lambert was the third guy that played on this line, the other winger. He had 6 goals, 8 assists for 14 points. Also a free agent. I gave him a slightly higher grade of a B or a B-, just because he did not get plural majors. And we spent way too much of the year talking about that. And also, you know, he was a guy that's just loved by his teammates, loved by the coaching staff. He wore a letter, and actually Moyle might have worn one too, but he was a guy that like always seemed to do the right things on the ice. He just didn't quite have the talent that everyone else did, and therefore was going to be farther down in the lineup. But a good player and a perfect fourth line for this team. I mean, you could not have asked for much of a better fourth line, because they kill penalties. They generally know what they're doing. They play defense. They chip in a few goals. And when you're just stacked with NHL talent, you need a line of guys that are going to be able to do that.
Yeah. Lambert had 14 points, which was a career high. The 6 goals was a career high as well. And he did it playing a smaller role than he really had when he was scoring that many points previously. When he had 13 as freshman and sophomore year, he was playing more in the top 6. This year was in a different, more defensive role. And he also had a couple goals in the tournament, which is always a plus. And so I'll give him that B+, C-, or B-, C+.
Wow. Yeah.
Got that one off range, but that's where that fourth line, I think, was in my mind.
Yeah. And the same thing with Luke Morgan, who was the fourth guy they rotated in. He would usually be the 13th skater, and he would take Moyle's spot sometimes. He would take Lambert's. He would go up and take Estapa's or whomever. He was just a burner who didn't really have much of a scoring finish or touch, but he ended up with 4 goals and 7 assists for 11 points, which is pretty much Luke Morgan, but he did everything else on the ice that you could ask for. And another guy is just loved by his teammates, a tryhard who actually played with KJ Meniere's for a while last year in their freshman year. And I thought played okay on that line, didn't have the finishing, but could skate with them and, you know, did sort of the dirty work. And that's very Luke Morgan, forechecking. Again, just kind of perfect lower line skater on this team. I gave him a C because he came back for his 5th year and you pretty much knew what you were going to get from him. And that's what he gave you. And you're fine with that.
Fun fact about Luke Morgan, he had fewer penalty minutes than Eric Portillo.
That's great.
He had
so is 2. He going to win the Lady Bing?
Yeah, he would be Michigan's Lady Bing nominee. He had 2 PIM. The only players with fewer had zero. There were three of them: Noah West, Jack Levy, and Jake Gingell. So
all of who complained in about a combined four games.
They played in a combined seven games.
Okay.
But yeah, you look at Morgan, he didn't take the same bad penalties that some of those fourth liners did. Could play up and down the lineup a little bit. Never played a ton of minutes this season. He was often the 13th skater who would only get a few shifts per period, but he was fine. I'll give him C.
The last three guys we'll touch on in this segment, I'm just going to say sort of together because I called them the reserves because none of them played a ton unless it was absolutely necessary or there was an injury or things happened. The first guy doesn't really fall into this point, but he gets counted there because he didn't really play, and that's Eric Cicchellini, who is too bad because I would have liked to seen him play more. We talked about him in the preview saying that there's a couple lines he could fit in that you would really like. We theorized about what he would look like on the hero line as sort of a shooter to pair with Beniers. He had a nice year at the end of the year last year, but had a knee injury. I gave him an NA because I don't
know it's really an incomplete.
What else you could really do. I'd like to see him play with some talented guys because I think that he could actually put up some goals. And then the other two guys are Philip LaPointe and Nick Granowitz. Both guys had 4 points. LaPointe had the 3 goals and the assist. Granowitz had the 1 goal and the 3 assists. Neither one played a ton except when Michigan was down a lot of players. I gave them NAs as well because, again, they didn't really play a whole lot. LaPointe seems like a guy probably going to play a little more next year, at least at fourth line stuff at the minimum, because he's going to be older and he's going to know what to do. He's played some defense, scored a few goals this year in his limited duty. Granowitz, I think, was a walk-on originally and had a nice year his first year. This year, again, just didn't really get in the lineup. Both obviously are free agents. Not a whole lot to say about this group of players other than you'd think that Cicchellini and LaPointe have spots waiting for them, assuming that they want to play here next year.
Yeah, Granowitz and LaPointe, you can say a little more about, but all three are incompletes in my book. Yep. In terms of the grading. Cicchellini, I think, will be interesting next season because I'm not really sure where he would have slotted in on this team, because if the options are either break up the top three lines or have him on the fourth line or have him injured, I would probably have opted for injured because I don't think that playing on the fourth line would have suited him whatsoever. And I don't know there would have been any changes I would have wanted to make to those top three lines to put him in there. So,
well, I would guess that you could have played with Bortolo.
You probably could have kicked Estapa out, but I like what Estapa brought as the physical edge to that line, which Cicchellini didn't have. So anyway, point is he should be a guy in the top six-ish next year, and it'll be very interesting to see where his career goes because I still think he has promise. Granowitz, sure. He played in the first half and then only played during the Olympian or WJC games the rest of the way. Didn't do a lot of note for me. LaPointe, I still like. I still think he has an interesting skill set as a sort of hybrid of edge and a little bit of skill. I would like to see him in a full-time capacity next season. We'll see if he sticks around to do so.
If you find yourself in the penalty box in Ann Arbor or Metro Detroit, you want a Michigan man arguing your case. Call former prosecutor and now criminal defense attorney Jonathan Paul, the Michigan Law Grad, at 248-924-9458 or visit his website at michiganlawgrad.com.
with the forwards. Now we'll come back and talk about defense, goaltending, and some overalls. Well, I guess when you're going to start defense, you got to start with the number one pick in the draft, right? He would play it on pretty much Michigan's top line, or pairing. I guess you could argue which one. They had two pairs that they kept together, especially down the stretch. But Owen Power seems to be the headliner. Everybody wants to talk about him. He's with the Sabres now. He played his sophomore year at Michigan, scored 3 goals, got 29 assists for 32 points. That's a lot of assists. He's an interesting case because he just didn't really score a whole lot, and there were two other defensemen that scored a ton. He did get a lot of assists that, you know, brought his numbers pretty high up. He was a bit up and down on defense. I gave him a B just because in the end he did contribute 32 points and played power play, played penalty kill, was on the ice a lot. There were times when he was frustrating to watch, but there were other times when he was just pouring in some points. I think that the standard for being the top pick is going to always be like you should be the best player on the ice, and I don't think that he was for Michigan very rarely just because of who else they had. So it's a little bit tough to grade him on that, but in the end, I thought a little about, you know, a B, a little better than average. He improved a little bit, but was not really like the headliner, I would say, of the defensemen.
Yeah, I would mostly agree with that. I would probably give him a B plus or an A minus, something like that. He was still a fine player for Michigan, played a lot of minutes, played in a lot of situations. And look, he also had a pretty good Allentown regional. I mean, he had four assists against Quinnipiac, so I think that
That was the thing, is he threw in a bunch of assists at the end, but went through a large stretch of the middle portion of the year. And I know he missed a couple games. Obviously, he was in the Olympics, but went through several series without recording a point. And that was, you know, that happens, especially as a defenseman.
Yeah, it does. And that's understandable. It was expectations, I think, was a big part of this. But it's worth remembering, I think, with him, of how young he is. I was thinking about that doing my piece that went up today about the NHL futures of these guys. But like Owen Power was 17 when he enrolled at Michigan. He is currently 19. He's a late November 2002 birthday. And so when you're comparing him to, let's say, Luke Hughes, I mean, he's only 10 months older than Luke Hughes. And then when you look at, obviously, Nick Blankenberg, Blankenberg is 4.5 years older than him. So
I thought you were going to say he was 40, because I would have believed you.
So that's an important thing to just keep in mind in terms of remembering him in hindsight. But a fine player.
His D pairing partner was Blankenberg, but we're going to talk about him later because that's not where Michigan put them when all their chips were down. Keaton Pearson, who is also person and guy and man, because we can never remember his name, was Owen Power's partner and was probably a perfect pairing for him because he was more of a stay-at-home guy. He was a free agent, didn't get drafted. This was his junior year, I believe, his third year. He had 0 goals and 4 assists, but that wasn't his role. He was the guy to make sure that no one got back in alone. He covered for some of Power's chances that he took, because that's what Michigan wanted to do, is go and skate and create stuff. And Keaton Pearson will sit back and make sure that nothing happens. And he did that pretty well. I thought his in-zone defense was improved. I thought that when things went sour, when Power would try to make a play, Pearson was able to cover a lot of that up and break things up, or at least delay long enough that people could get back. And so I gave him a B, despite not really contributing as much offensively, because that wasn't really his role. And while it's not what he's going to, you know, probably his highest potential, I thought he did what he was asked to do really well and allowed Owen Power to go out and get a lot of those points.
Do you want to guess Keaton Pearson's shooting percentage through the course of his Michigan tenure?
I was going to say, because for last year, it'd be pretty easy. He has, what, one goal, I think?
He has one career goal.
And probably 40 shots, so maybe 2.5%.
1.1%.
Oh, I was actually really
one
close.
Goal on 94 shots in his Michigan career. So,
okay.
Yeah, he is what he is, but I think it is a player I liked a little bit this year. I thought he was able to bring some stability to the pairs that he played on. And I think he should have a role next season too. And I think he made some improvements. I thought his issues with puck handling that had plagued him in the past were not as big this season. So I'll give him a B+.
Yeah. The second pair, or the 1A pair, however you want to, was headlined by Luke Hughes. he was a freshman top five pick, went fourth overall to the Devils last year. 17 goals, 22 assists for 39 points. I mean, there's an argument that he was Michigan's best player. He definitely has some defense issues. He has some I'm not big yet enough yet issues. He's not going to walk into the NHL in the next couple of years and just take it over because he's not ready for all of that just yet. But you could see the potential and you could see the skating ability. He's the best skating freshman Michigan's probably ever had. He might be the best skater Michigan's ever had. I mean, he has hands to score like a forward, to move the puck. He beats guys with his feet and then puts the puck on sticks. Like I said, there's definitely room for improvement in the defensive zone and in his decision-making of just making the fundamental play sometimes. But I mean, his ceiling right now feels like it's off the charts. I'm giving him an A. And the memory is just, I mean, it's going to be the OSU goal, right? Like where he just shoots down the ice out of a cannon.
There should be more memories next year, probably.
Well, yes, but I'm talking about like for this season.
Sure.
He's supposed to be back next year, according to the Devils, if you want to believe them, which I would advise never believing Devils. But
Hughes scored 17 goals on 17.5% shooting, and so I think there is a chance that comes down a bit next season. But assuming he's back at Michigan, I think there's a lot of reason to believe he's among the foremost Hobey Baker contenders. We kind of saw that years ago with Cale Makar, his second year, where he kind of already laid the groundwork and then was able to put together a really, really good season. And if Hughes is then getting the top power play assignments with Power and Blankenberg out of the picture, then that could boost the point totals. But this year, you know, he was a really good puck rusher, a good skill set, an effective goal scorer. In terms of the confines of what we wanted him to do, I would say it's an A for me.
I mean, I just can't picture him having much better of a year. I mean, again, this is where you have to take into context, like, okay, we're going to give some goals away on the defensive side, but like 17 goals, that was a freshman record. And I think second from a defenseman at Michigan in any year.
I believe that was right.
Yeah. So it's just, he's going to be, when you think of next year's team, assuming that he comes back and stays, which is what it seems like will happen. When you think towards next year's team and you think of the guys that you're excited to watch, I mean, he's number one on the list, I think. So
he's towards the top.
His defensive partner is sort of a strong comparison to Keaton Pearson, is Jacob Truscott, who provided some more offense, 2 goals and 15 assists. Actually ended up getting a lot of assists for 17 points. He was a 5th round pick in 2020. Finished his second season in Ann Arbor. So not bad offensive numbers at all, but he's sort of also Hughes's defensive babysitter in a way. Is like, hey, Luke, go make some plays. I'll sit back here and make sure nothing terrible happens. And he would step in and contribute, obviously, with his point total. But I thought he did a great job. They played Hughes and Truscott together all year and very rarely, if ever, broke up that pairing. And they fit together really well. Truscott, I gave a B because I just thought he exceeded expectations as to what you would want from what he was given.
Yeah, I thought it was a little bit better of a year from Truscott than last year, where there were more noticeable ups and downs. And a chunk of his point total was the playing with Luke Hughes thing. Hughes had a point on 7 of Truscott's points this season. So... You know, just kind of a factor there, but thought was a fine player and will be probably on the same pair next season and getting big assignments again. So I like him a lot. I'll give him a B+.
Yeah. The only one negative is the one major in Minneapolis.
But, yep.
But other than that, I thought, you know, very, very good year, especially for a sophomore. The third pairing was arguably, again, one of Michigan's best defensemen, you could argue here, Nick Blankenberg, who just got himself an NHL contract. And that was, you know, a topic that was discussed all year is, you know, will he be able to transition to the NHL? Can he play defense? He is older, like you said, but he's just so small. And will he be able to stand up to it? Well, the Blue Jackets took a chance on him and he's held his own for through the first couple games. We'll see what happens the last few. But he had 14 goals and 15 assists for 29 points. I mean, he came out of nowhere as a free agent as well. He was kind of a guy that Michigan signed, and I don't know that there were a ton of lofty expectations, but he really developed into a good player on the power play and a guy that could rush the puck up the ice. He even had a knack for sneaking backdoor and scoring on some cross ice diagonals, as he did a couple of times. I mean, I gave him an A because I think Michigan got absolutely everything that they could get out of him. The memory for me is going to be when he scored in Columbus and then skated behind the net and celebrated with the dog. I mean, that's kind of the thing that you're going to remember about him this year.
Yeah. Blankenberg can get an A, if nothing else, a career achievement award. But this was the best year of his career. He was always a promising piece, always a guy that I liked quite a bit, but then really peaked as a upperclassman with the 14 goals, 29 points. Had the moments when he'd get pushed around and that sort of thing in the defensive zone, but that's the way it goes, and I don't really knock that on him too much. So when you score that many goals as a defenseman, even if it is somewhat shooting percentage filled, I think, and he was the captain and the team leader, all that sort of stuff. So,
well, and what, half the team drove down to see him and KJ in their opener. So
A feels right.
His pairing at the end of the year, not the best fit, as you've mentioned a number of times, but at some point, this is where you had to go. If you wanted this guy on the ice, he'll get a bigger run next year. But is Ethan Edwards, who was a fourth rounder in 2020. He just finished his first year as a freshman in Ann Arbor. He had 3 goals, 8 assists for 11 points. I thought that he struggled early on and really came on in 2022, like a lot of the rest of the team. He will be a top 4 defenseman, you would figure, going into next year. Maybe even playing him with Keaton Pearson would be a good idea. I mean, obviously, you think most likely Hughes and Truscott play together. They could pair him with Steve Holtz, who we'll talk about shortly next. But I thought he really improved his defensive game. I thought got better. He did struggle a little bit once you started playing against bigger teams. He's not the biggest guy yet, but showed some offensive skill, I thought, in different games, scoring against AIC in the tournament as well.
He had 2 goals and 6 assists for 8 points in the final 16 games of the season, which was definitely a kind of a good thing to see. He was pretty quiet prior to that, even though the skill set definitely stood out in terms of his skating ability and that sort of thing. And, you know, he's more of a developmental piece in the sense that he was a single overager in terms of when they brought him in, but still will only be 20 this summer. And I think we'll have an opportunity to make a big impact on next year's team. However, he's paired. He could see power play time next year too. Possible. I mean, he could also, I would think Seamus Casey will probably be in line for some as well, beyond what Hughes gets. But Edwards is one of those good developmental pieces. There were some worrisome moments defensively, certainly in the tournament, but an intriguing and promising player. And I'll give him a solid B.
Yep, that's what I gave him as well. Michigan had a few reserves that they played on defense. Jack Summers rotated in a decent portion of the year. Once it got down to the final stretch, he didn't play as much. He is a fourth year senior, 0 goals and 2 assists for him. He was a free agent. How many games did he play in?
26.
That's more than I would have guessed. I don't have a lot to say about Jack Summers. You liked his stretch passing ability. I think he did improve to a certain extent over the course of the year. This was always going to be a tough six to break into because you had four that spots that were pretty, were not going anywhere. You know, Pearson sat out a little bit at times and Edwards struggled early on. So there's always sort of that fourth, fifth, maybe sixth spot that you could get into. Steve Holtz is a guy we'll talk about in a second here. He played a little bit of time in there, but in the end, I just, you know, Summers was not in their sixth best defenseman and it just didn't really play in that many big games.
Yeah, Summers needed to beat out Ethan Edwards and he wasn't able to do so. And once that became clear, then he wasn't going to be in the lineup. So we learned more about Summers in the previous years, certainly his first 2 years when he was an everyday player. He is what he is. Wasn't very noticeable this year at all, kind of the where were you category.
Yeah.
And so, I don't know, C minus.
Yeah.
Shrug. Oh. That sort of thing.
Shrug. Is that a grade?
He's a guy that you, in theory, could think about in terms of the COVID shirt, as if you wanted a trusty veteran back. The problem is they signed a lot of defensemen for next season. So,
which should tell you what they think.
We already think they're rolling over five-ish for next season, and they added a five-man defensive class, so doesn't wow. seem like there's
five?
Room. Yep.
That's many.
That's a lot.
Yeah, and they're only losing what?
Two.
Two? Yeah.
Well, they're losing
three with Summers.
Three with Summers, yeah.
Yeah. Well, and then four with Karenin, and we'll see about Holtz.
Well, Karenin's a junior.
Oh, yeah, you're right. Okay.
He doesn't have to leave unless he's being processed, which isn't out of the question, but.
And he also might be a walk on. He's a local kid, I think. Anyway.
Well, sure, but you don't need 15 defensemen. I mean,
that's true. Steve Holtz is the next guy. He was a guy that really popped for a while at the end of the first half, I think. And Michigan couldn't find a sixth defenseman that they really liked. Holtz is a massive human being. He's, I think, what, 6'5", 220-ish? And
6'4", 190 is what CHN has him at.
Well, he looked bigger to me, I guess, then. So he was a freshman this year, came out of kind of nowhere and had five assists to get his 5 points, didn't score a goal, was a free agent, just kind of a throw in at the in this class that you're like, I don't know who this guy is and if he's going to play, but he worked his way in and got a number of games in. I would say he played, what, three series or so?
He played 11 total games. Okay. He played four series and then parts of three other series.
And got hurt against Ohio State in Columbus at the end of the first half, I believe. And
he played one game against UMass. I think it was in that series that he was hurt.
Oh, maybe he got hurt then. Okay. Yeah, he got hurt in both games, came back, and that was it.
I think that's what it was. Yeah, I think it was an issue because that's why he didn't play against Tech. And then they thought he was ready, and then it turns out he wasn't.
But he kind of went from not even skating at all to, whoa, this guy just put in some points and maybe it was, you know, skating next to Owen Power. But he's a guy who you could maybe fit with an Edwards or a Casey next year as sort of their defensive partner who can sit back and be big and physical and hopefully not let a lot of things happen and let them go create on offense.
Well, Holtz is a guy who he did have three secondary assists out of his five. So important to keep that in mind. But otherwise, I think the thing with him is I don't think he'll be a regular next year if he's on the roster, which we assume he will be. But he's a player kind of like, you know, how a lot of teams have a Kyle Clifford type player who you don't skate in that many games, but you throw him out there once out of every three or four to bang around a little bit, especially if it's going to be a rivalry game or you think it's going to be a little more physical or you're concerned about, you know, that edge to it, right? Then, oh, we're going to put in our big guy. And I mean, that's what I kind of said after the regional, right? Was that I don't know about having some undersized defensemen in the lineup, it might be good if we could have had an option to play a little bit bigger guy.
Guy that could stand up to some of the men they face.
Yeah, to push around a little bit. Like, right? Like, if you're playing a Minnesota State or you're playing Ohio State or you're playing that sort of team, then you put him in the lineup. He's not in the lineup every night, but you have one guy you rotate him with, and he's your just kind of we're going to beat you up type player. So,
yeah.
You know, he's not the fleetest of foot and not the most natural handling the puck, but he has a skill set, and I don't have an issue with him as a seventh defenseman.
The then eighth potential defenseman slash forward, Jay Karinen, who I kind of liked early on, and then he kind of faded and maybe overskated a few things that he should have done and gave up some odd man rushes the other way. He was in the mix, I would say, for what, the first half to first two thirds of the year, and then didn't really play a lot after that. He ended up with a goal and no assists for 1 point, free agent, probable walk on. I gave him an incomplete, same with Holtz, same with Summers, as well. Summers, we played enough games, we said about C, but he's a guy that like isn't the worst player to put on the ice, but is also probably not a top six.
Karinen was a regular through the fall, and then after the Ohio State series, he did not play a single game except one against UMass that was not a Olympian WJC, etc. type game. I don't know. I mean, if you want to give him an incomplete, you can give him an incomplete. If you want me to give him a grade, I can give him a D or something like that, because he had the same number of points as 5 minute majors, which is not a great sign.
Well, that's fair. Okay. that's not great. The thing with him though, is he always was in a different position, right? He was always on a different pair, or he was a 13th man, or he was like skating on a different line. I mean, like at that point,
he had 5 shots in 15 games, which is also not great. So, and he wasn't he the only player to be a minus on the team? So
I think so, because somebody, Van Wyle,
rallied at the end,
right? Yeah. He got back to even with all of his goal rush in the last two or three games. So those are all of the skaters from last year's. We'll move on to the goalies.
You forgot one.
I did. Who did I forget?
Jake Gingell.
So moving on to the goalies. I mean, Jake, did he play two games?
He played two games. Yeah.
How many shots did he have?
He had 0 shots.
So he had fewer shots than Jay Karinen.
He had the same number of shots as Noah West.
Okay. You need a 5 minute ramble on Jake Gingell now.
I mean, he was a senior, a program guy. He got to play a game or two every year. Was pretty bad when he played, but he played.
Under the goalies?
There's more games than I have played for Michigan.
That's fair. Probably not more games you've dreamt of playing, though. So
I think probably still is the case.
Okay. Well, we have different dreams. In net, I mean, there's basically one goalie that played other than in a couple of extreme circumstances, and that was Eric Portillo. He was in his second season at Michigan. He went 31-10 and won. His 2.14 GAA, 0.926 save percentage. He had 3 shutouts and 4 assists. He was a third round pick in 2019 with Buffalo. After looking at last year with Strauss Mann putting up the best numbers behind a good team, obviously, and then him basically replicating it and even better in some areas than Mann was, I would think. He does have his struggles, had his rebound control issues. Every once in a while, his wanderings would result in something poor, but I think by the end of the year, we all had just sort of been fine with them because it's just sort of who he is, and he creates offense off of them, and he also controls the puck behind the net pretty well so that forwards can't come in and establish the zone as well. He also is very vocal on and off the ice, I believe. He got everyone fired up after those second and third goals against Quinnipiac, where he basically got everybody in line and, I don't know, seemingly faked a skate issue to draw a timeout to kill some momentum in that game. I mean, he's in the conversation for was Michigan's best player, right?
The thing about Portillo is he played a ton.
Like in college hockey. I mean, like, if you look at, like, guys who play seasons, he played, what, 40-some games, but...
He played, just compare him to the rest of the country. He played a crazy amount relative to everybody else.
Yes.
The only comparable player is Dryden McKay, who played same number of games, actually one more game for Minnesota State, 43 for McKay. You want to guess how many more saves Portillo made than Dryden McKay?
Oh, a bunch, maybe 150?
350. And they had a pretty similar save percentage. So he just played a ton of hockey relative to a lot of the other players in the country. And, you know, if you want to go by minutes, it was him and McKay, and then it was everybody else. Brandon Bussey of Western Michigan was pretty high up there. Jackson Stauber, Ryan Fanti, and then it goes down from there. But Portillo shouldered a massive load and managed to play very well. And I think him coming back is what gives the team a very high floor for next season. So I'll give him a solid A.
I agree. Definitely an A. Yeah. I mean, you said it. I just, you know, the thing that I kind of already said this, but just man played really, really well for 2 years. And then to go from him, didn't you say at the beginning of the year, it's just going to be hard to replicate those numbers? And
Portillo, his save percentage was just a tiny bit lower than Mann's was last year. And I thought he faced harder chances than Mann did last year, and certainly harder than Mann did in the 2019-2020 year, yeah, when Mann put up the 940 or whatever, where Michigan was just trying to trap the hell out of you.
Yeah.
That Portillo had to face a lot of high-end chances, and that was a stylistic decision the way the team played, and he did his job, and he kept them in the Frozen Four. He kept them in a number of games.
Yeah, I think that they said, all right, we have Mount Portillo back there, who is in some ways just better, I think, in do-or-die situations. So we're going to go attack and create a bunch of chances, and when we give them up, make a save. And I mean, I don't have the numbers on it, but he did not give up many goals in transition. And the number of really good saves that I can remember versus the goals he gave up are, I would say, more heavily slanted towards better saves. His backups, Noah West, came from Bobby Moe and Robert Morris, who put up good numbers at Robert Morris. He played against Minnesota in the first game at Yost when Portillo was pulled. Did he play again?
He played two games. He played in both of the games Portillo was pulled in, home to Minnesota and at Ohio State.
Ah, yes, on that slush fest on the Saturday game, the last game of the first half. I assume he'll be back.
I mean, he's a sophomore.
Yeah.
He could play one more year at Michigan, and then he could transfer back to Robert Morris, because Robert Morris is coming back in 23-24.
We didn't watch him play. We don't really have any notes on him. He didn't really play.
I mean, if you think about it, that would honestly be a really good scenario for him, right? You play another year on a good team as probably a backup, a good team, where you don't get to play much, and then you're probably not the starter the next year. So then you get to go back and play for a bad team where you get to be the starter,
where you've had all this like Frozen Four experience.
Yeah. I mean, that would be pretty darn cool.
Jack Levy was behind him. Basically the same thing. Control V, control V, not E this time. He did play actually probably a little bit more, because they brought him in towards the end of the season to finish out, I believe it was senior night, and then against Ohio State, I think. And then they brought him in for
he played twice against MSU.
And then he played. Oh, okay. So he played against Michigan State, and then they brought him in against Michigan State again in the quarterfinals. And one time he gave up like two or three not great goals. And the last time he finished the shutout, I believe.
He made four saves on six shots in 11 minutes and 43 seconds of game time, which were the only 11 minutes and 43 seconds he ever played in 4 years at Michigan. So, you know, good on the staff to find a way to get him into the games. He's also extremely old.
Is he my age?
He's a 1997 birthday, like Lambert and Van Wy.
Wow, so he's like 25?
We will be 25 on November, or sorry, September 19th.
Okay, so almost.
We'll set a reminder for his birthday.
All right, now we'll talk about the overall team grades or sectional grades, where we have offense, defense, power play, penalty kill, and goaltending. For the offense, they scored 167 goals in 42 games, which is just under 4 goals a game. They struggled a bit against Notre Dame at times, but other than that, they did not have a whole lot of struggles. We think that part of their struggles against Denver was part of Denver was very good, but all the other part was sort of just trying not to get got and extending the game, which they did. So I don't really fault the offense quite as much there, if that wasn't in fact the case. But I gave the offense an A because, I mean, yeah, I guess you could have scored more goals, but they were, what, third in the country, I think. So, I mean, that's kind of what you expected them to do, and they hit expectations. And I don't think you can expect a team to score 6 or 7 goals a game in college. So,
yeah, offensively, they were an A. I mean, they were a fine team offensively, and they had periods of the season where they were not playing at full strength offensively, and yet they
continued scoring goals. defense, they played 42 games as well. Surprise. Gave up 94 goals, which is about 2.24 goals per game. You know, the first half of the season, there were definitely a lot more defensive lapses. There were probably more odd man rushes as well. There were times when you wondered if this was going to be this team's downfall. The second half of the season seemed to ease all of those concerns, as I thought their in zone defense pretty much got better a ton. There were still odd man rushes. That's going to happen a bit stylistically, but I don't think it was a huge concern, at least a consistent concern. I give their defense a B because I thought they generally played pretty well in their own zone, especially in the second half of the season, which you see in college hockey, good teams work through some things in the first half and then they are who they are in the second half. And I thought Michigan was, I mean, pretty good defensively all year. I think that if you're going to try to go and score goals and you have guys like Owen Power and Luke Hughes and Blankenberg who are going to go and attack, you're just going to give up some chances, but that's not because they're bad players. It's sort of the system that you're playing in. And so I give them a B.
I give them a probably C plus, B minus. I just thought that it was a little frustrating how often in the first few months that they were just kind of relying on Portillo to bail them out.
That's true.
So, but yeah, they were better defensively as the season went along. So that's what I'll give them.
Their power play scored at a 27% clip, which is pretty good. It was not the highest because apparently some teams can figure out how to get in the 30s, which is really high. They were number 3 in the country in power play scoring percentage. They did it in a number of different ways. We said that it was sort of like teeing up Brisson, but then Breniers added things. They scored from the point. Hughes played parts in that. Blankenberg chipped in. So you had a number of guys that were scoring power play goals. I gave them an A. I'm not really sure what you can really expect for them to get better. They could have been a little more deceptive at times and maybe use the bumper a little bit more, we had talked about. But I thought they had good plans for 5-on-3s as well, too. So it didn't start out really well in both of those areas. But I thought, again, as the season went along and they figured out who they were and what they were good at, coaches adjusted decently well. And I really have no complaints about the power play.
I give them a B plus. Let's go with that. They had one of the better power plays in the country, I think, given the talent that should have been higher. But power play is also kind of all over the place. You don't get as high of a sample size. So,
all right. The other side, penalty kill. Again, started off sloppy again, which, you know, was frustrating because you return everybody. You got a bunch of seniors who this is what they've done. Guys like Van Wy and Moyle and Lambert and Morgan. I mean, there's the guys that can play back there. They had good goaltending. So you would expect it to be a little bit better, but it did. It steadily improved. They got up to 83%, which isn't world beaters, but it's pretty good. They scored 8 shorthanded goals, which seems kind of like a lot. They were 17th in the country, which is top third. It's not like the best, but I would say that if you got to 17th and 83% after their start, it's you've shown a lot of improvement. I gave them a B because it was probably it was good enough. I think it, I mean, they could have wanted they could have hung a final banner with this power penalty kill. It wasn't like the 18 team where when
it wasn't the fatal flaw.
No, where you when you took a power play or a penalty and you just hung on to everything for dear life for 2 minutes.
Yeah, I think that a B suits them. They were a very solid penalty kill. I think at times they were unlucky in the results. Where the process was a little better than the results, but 83% is fine. And you add those two together, they're well over 100 in the special teams department. So no real issues.
Yeah. And honestly, like with the sheer volume of breakaways that they got on the penalty kill there, I mean, you could even say that they could have even been pushing double digit goals on down a man, which to me is just insane for only playing 40 games, but still good. Goaltending.
They were also, by the way, number two in the country in shorthanded goals.
Yeah.
With eight. So I might want to revise my up to a B plus, maybe.
Okay. You're ticking it up a bit.
Yeah.
Good. I think it was good. And the improvement, again, and that's what you're looking for is, I mean, the improvement that all these areas are showing over the course of the year, I think everything pretty much went up, and that's what you want to see from college teams. Goaltending. 92 goals in 42 games. A couple of those goals were taken out because empty netters don't get counted against goaltending. Leaves you with about 1.85 goals per game. I mean, obviously with this offense, that's generally going to be enough against, you know, with most offenses, that's going to be enough. I thought that Portillo was really, really good. I mean, we've talked about that. It's basically grading him because we talked about West and Levy not really playing at all. I mean, I'd take this goaltending any year, and it's not just good enough to win a national title, but can be I mean, it was a lot of the reason Michigan was there. So I'm giving it an A.
Yep. Goaltending gets an A.
Well, those are the grades that I have. Is there anything else that you want to talk about that you think that we missed regarding this team? I mean, you look at the overall team. Did they meet expectations? I think that, like, you know, we talked about this a little bit last week and a little bit when they were going to Boston. Yeah, you want to hang that banner. And Steve King made a really good point where it's always going to be disappointing when you don't, especially when you have a team like this. And I am always going to look back at this team and be like, you know, what if? But the reality is they hung two banners. They probably wish they could get that Big Ten regular season one back. They had the lead for the majority of the second half and didn't get it done against Notre Dame. But you get to the Frozen Four, you're a one seed, you're facing essentially three other one seeds even. But truth be told, they did hang two banners. They won the Big Ten championship. They did get to the Frozen Four. Those are good things. I think they're always going to look back at that regular season series that ended in Notre Dame and think we win a game or, you know, get 4 points and we get all the banners essentially. But, you know, Notre Dame was always a tough matchup for them. Minnesota was really, really good. In the end, they get through the Allentown Regional and they get to Boston and they basically play against 3 1 seeds, even though Minnesota was technically a two, they played like a one. They had the talent of a one and, you know, they lose to the team that ends up winning it all. I mean, you get four teams that are all pretty good, about the same level, and three of them are going to lose, right? And you know, you hope it's going to be Michigan, but again, overtime happens, and so I think that this is about as good as you could have asked for, aside from winning the national title. I mean, they've met expectations, and they gave themselves as good a shot as they could. They got the number one overall seed. Remember, at the beginning, we said at the beginning of the year, you know, the one thing you can kind of control is if you get the number one overall and then you get sort of the team that is the AQ and maybe you get a quote unquote pass in the first round. And they did that, right? And then they beat a tough Quinnipiac team. So you wish they would have hung the last banner, but in the end, I mean, they took their chances as good as any.
Yeah, there are some stylistic things that sort of looking back, I'll always kind of be frustrated about, and certainly the slow starts to the seasons, particularly in November, have always been frustrating for watching a Mel Pearson coach team. And I sort of hoped that would not be the case with this squad. But at the end of the day, yeah. the results are the results, and they had a really good team and they rolled the dice and they got decently far. And the best you can do is to keep building good teams and keep rolling the dice and go from there, because the tournament really often is not that indicative of much of anything besides who got the lucky roll those days. So again, the results are the results. And I think that says enough for this team to ultimately be pretty satisfied.
Yeah. I think, you know, the bummer is like, I'm going to miss watching some of these guys, you know, I mean, it looks yep. like we'll get to see Hughes probably again next year. We'll get to see Portillo again, guys that are enjoyable. We're going to see probably Mackey and Duke, and those guys were both really fun, and we expect them to grow. But you know, Bordalo was really neat, and Brisson was kind of different, and Beniers is, you know, like you said, probably going to be the best in the NHL out of all of them. And then guys like Blankenberg, right? And even sort of the grinders, like we'd been watching them for a long time, and you saw them get to where they're at now, and how they fit in. And I think that's the bummer, is like this team was almost perfectly put together down to the man, you know, even going deep enough to sustain a couple injuries or sustain when tons of players go to either the World Juniors or the Olympics, and things are unforeseen in that nature. And it's a bummer that they couldn't get the last one, but like you said, the dice roll, I mean, in the end, that's all it is.
Pretty much. I mean, that's the nature of college hockey. And as long as you come away with some memories and things you can put sort of in terms of the program legacy in whether it's regular season or postseason tournament or Frozen Four, all those kinds of things, still is a pretty successful season.
And probably the more interesting thing is, now that we turn the page, is, you know, they got some dudes coming in next year, and yeah, they're going to be freshmen and they're going to be, you know, thinner and everything in that sense. But there's a lot to look forward to starting next week, I think.
Yeah, we'll have the final show of the season about the looking ahead to next year. Probably next week, although we'll yeah. see what happens with the Mel Pearson contract.
Oh, we might want to wait till May.
Yeah, we're going to wait and see how the next week goes, and then decide when to do the looking ahead show thereafter. But anyway, it was a fun season, but there will be more fun players on the horizon.
Agreed.
Listening to Michigan Hockey Cast 4.25 for Alex Dreen and David Nasternak. Come back at some point in the future. Not sure when, but we will be discussing things about the future that are not totally foreseen at the moment.